Welcome to the Thinking Big podcast, where I bring you the most exceptional minds in business, personal development, and beyond. And I'm your host, Sean Osborne. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing an extraordinary individual who has made a remarkable impact in the world of sales, consulting, and leadership. Zach Palmer is a true powerhouse, and I am thrilled to have him join us for what promises to be an enlightening and transformative episode.
Welcome to the Thinking Big podcast with Sean Osborne, the show helping you think bigger into your life and potential. Sean believes by equipping you with the tools, strategies, and philosophies required to be successful in all aspects of your life, you can achieve anything you believe in. Empowering our own growth makes a deeply positive and lasting impact on our lives, community, and our world. Now, here's Sean.
With over 17 years of experience in business management and ownership, Zach has earned a reputation as a master of his craft. As the sales and business consultant at the Zach Palmer LLC, he has empowered high-ticket coaches, consultants, and service providers to reach unprecedented levels of success. By developing effective sales teams, refining product suites, and fostering mission-based leadership, Zach has helped his clients elevate their businesses to new heights. But Zach's expertise extends far beyond sales. At mastermind.com, he served as the director of training and coaching operations under the guidance of industry giants Tony Robbins and Dean Graziosi, where Zach co-developed two groundbreaking programs that generated millions in annual revenue. So get ready to be inspired, challenged, and empowered as Zach Palmer shares his wisdom, experience, and strategies for success with us. Without further ado, Zach, welcome to the show.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm super excited to be here, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Couldn't wait to get you on here. Now, we met, I don't know, maybe two and a half years ago. I can't remember, but it was through Tony Robbins and Dean Graziosi's, one of their businesses, Mastermind. And I know that you were the director of training and coaching operations there. Big operation. And I actually went and visited there a couple times. And one of the things, or again, just one of the things that really stood out in my mind was how big the sales team and that whole sales department is for that company. And it struck me because there's so many of us entrepreneurs, especially if you're newer into entrepreneurship or you're not that big, that we think, or we tend to think, that it's just like an online sales thing. It's like you put your stuff out there, you put your form out there, you direct people to it, and you make all of these sales from it. And we don't realize that there is a lot that goes on behind the scenes to truly make sales. So that's one of the things that blew me away when I went to the headquarters there in Phoenix.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of different elements of that experience. I mean, if people really knew the inner workings and the magnitude of that team overall, because it's not just sales, it's entire teams that are dedicated to communities and customer service and customer experience. And of course, the coaching and the event staffing and the event structure. You know, it's not just Dean and myself or Raph or any of the other speakers would get up on stage, but you got the AV and the tech and audio teams. It's like the amount of planning that went into all of the execution, so for everybody to see and experience things they get to experience, is a lot more than most people anticipate. But that's what creates an outstanding experience too.
That whole studio is just unbelievable. I saw it, you know, the newest version of it was in there, and I'm like just blown away by how much stuff actually goes into, yeah, what you said, creating that experience. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you, and this is what you teach, you know, you coach this here and you do this now as well, but on sales itself, it's like, what constitutes, because there's a point where you have a product that's $49, $99, $97, whatever you want to charge, that you really don't need a sales person. I mean, you could probably do better sales if you actually had a sales team and you did some one-on-one stuff. But what do you consider, I don't know, necessarily a high-ticket offer or a high-ticket product, or where, what is that point where we as entrepreneurs need to say, okay, we need to stop this online stuff and pray and hope and just put this out there and, you know, you build it and they will come, to actually focusing on, we really need to pay attention to sales?
That's a great question. And an interesting question, and one that is going to be a little bit nebulous for me to try and articulate a response to. So let me make my best stab at it. If I had to define a dividing line as far as the price point is concerned. Generally speaking, I would say the lowest minimum viable offer for a high ticket product is going to be about $5,000. And more often that mean is probably going to be around the $8,000 to $10,000 range from the majority of high ticket offers. Now those can go up into the 15, 20, 75, 100, 150. I mean, I've seen all of the above, but $5,000 tends to be about that benchmark where one, you have the capital necessary to be able to invest in the marketing in order to be able to get the people to the calls, and you have enough residual left over that you can actually afford to bring on really experienced high-level closers. So both of those variables are really important. Is you got to have a significant enough amount of cash flow in order to be able to feed the system, to bring the people in, and then you have to be able to provide a, you know, an exciting enough compensation plan that really invites the right people to come in, as one element or one consideration at least.
Yeah, and it's so again, for entrepreneurs or for newer entrepreneurs, I think one of the biggest things, and again, this is something that you actually coach on, is there's things that if you don't come from a sales background, you know, I think a lot of times when I work with entrepreneurs, they're the SMEs of what they do. Like they're the subject matter experts of X or Y, and that's what they're selling. Mm-hmm. They're not salespeople. Mm-hmm. They've never done sales. Most of them are scared shitless for sales. Most people do not want to get on calls with people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest hurdles that I see when I'm talking with people. Is that something that you see as well? I know that's something that you coach on and getting people through that.
It's an interesting question too. Yes and no, because one of the things that I frequently coach on, the irony is that you're absolutely correct in that most people want to get off of the sales floor. They want to stop being the one that's wearing multiple hats, the salesperson, the marketing executive, the skilled producer, the artist. And the first thing that they typically want to offboard is sales, but there is a time and a place to do it. And the simple reality is we're all in sales. Every single one of us, because all sales is influence. It's conversation. It's trying to persuade and move people one direction or another. We sell to our kids. We sell to our spouses, significant others, to our colleagues, to our friends. I mean, we sell ourselves every time we get up to make a decision. So we are all in sales. Oftentimes it's reframing the way that we are looking at that procedure or process. And particularly when it becomes, or as it pertains to business, one of the reasons that it's so critically important for an entrepreneur to be that salesperson in the beginning, in most cases, is because of the fact that they are the skilled producer. They are the visionary. They have the passion, the motivation, the conviction. And when they get in front of people, that comes through them. You know, they created their product, they created their service because they believe in it, at least we hope. You know, and when they believe in it, regardless of how skilled of a salesperson you are, what tools, what techniques, what strategies, you know, that conviction and belief will come through in that conversation. And I think more often than not, that's one of the biggest things to remember, is all we're doing is having a conversation. People get so stuck in, I have to say this right thing at the right place and time. But if you're just focused and completely present, and really leveraging the power of empathy and questioning and really trying and seeking to understand what is going on in that other person's world, it's no different than sitting across the coffee table from your best friend at lunch and asking about what's going on in their life, what things they're struggling with, what they really want their life to be like. And if they're in opening the invitation, you know, offering some feedback and guidance to help them cross that gap. And what happens through that experience is you will start to organically develop patterns. You'll start to use, at least when we're selling effectively, you'll start to notice that you're saying the same things. You develop a strategy, a syntax, an order of operations to those conversations so that they do flow and you can guide the person more organically and naturally. So what I found is the thing that we resist the most is oftentimes the thing that we need to do the most in order to reach our next level in life and business in any particular context. And the artist, the skilled producer, is usually the best person in the beginning to be having those sales conversations so that you can build a duplicatable framework, prove the process, and then you train and bring people on. That's one of the most effective ways to scale in that context.
And that makes a lot of sense because, yeah, you have to know, you have to have that process down. You have to know what you're doing. So I don't consider myself a salesperson by any means. I'm like most people. I'm comfortable with it, but not comfortable with it. Like I don't have enough seat time, I think, to be really effective at it, if that makes sense. But I remember, God, back when I was, God, maybe 20, I was young, and I lived in Omaha, Nebraska, which is like the capital for telemarketers. It's central in the U.S., so it's like they put all the telemarketers there because you can call you can literally be there all day and call all the way across the U.S. from California to New York. And I remember being in there, and that taught me a lot. It's like I remember when I first started doing sales there, I would like make one sale per day. And it's like you're just sitting there, you're going through the script, you're just doing these things. By the time I left there and we had a product, like we would switch maybe once every month or something. But by the time you were familiar with the product and you understood how to talk to people, how to interact, it was like 25, 30 per day. And it's just that getting familiar with it or getting familiar with that process and getting, I don't know, at ease with that process and with talking with people. But I still have that trouble today. I still go through that when I'm getting on the phone with people to sell. And my first operation is always, yeah, it's online. And then if I need to, I will get on. And that's one of the things that I have to work on. And I know many of the entrepreneurs that are listening are probably the same way. It's like we've got to, especially for those higher ticket things, is we've got to make it to where we make it personal. We talk with the people. That's a lot of the stuff that you taught and went through. It's so important. But we've got to do it. I mean, to me, it was the seat time. It was just doing it over and over again, doing it 150 times a day. You get good at doing it, but you can't get good at doing it until you do that.
Yeah. It's repetition and it's frameworks. And, you know, ironically, that was my introduction to sales. My very first, I don't even like to tell the story, but my very first, you know, job ever was in a telemarketing facility. And I still remember the specific products that we sold, but it was a very, very enlightening experience to me because one, I was the only person over 400 employees that was working part-time because I was still in high school. So I'd like finish football practice and run over to the facility and maybe get 3.5-4 hours of phone time in. But when I learned that I had a unique gift for influence and communication, was through that process because I became one of the top two salespeople in the company, being the only one working part-time at the age of 16 years old. He and I outsold everyone else in the company combined, and we were always neck and neck for first place. And I'm like, you know, this sales thing is kind of cool, but it also taught me the power of repetition and frameworks. And a lot of that uncertainty that we feel is when you go into a conversation, if you don't have kind of a map, you know, it's not necessarily like the exact turn by turn directions. You need to say this here, you need to ask this question here, but it's more of that guide of knowing this is where I'm starting. This is what the end result is. And this is the big picture items that I need to fully understand in order to guide this person to that particular outcome, which as sales professionals is typically going to be the sale as long as we're doing it ethically and we're selling a product or service that they need. That's what puts a lot of or creates a lot of that ease and eliminates the dis-ease because you now have a path that is guiding you toward that particular outcome. And then as you get those reps in, you develop more certainty, you can refine the questions that you ask, you understand your product, the delivery, things that create more resistance, and ideally eliminate and overcome a lot of the quote-unquote objections or resistance that you might experience before you even get to the ask. And by the time you get to the ask, they're saying, take my card, let's do this. I know I want to work with you.
And it's funny because you say that, and I can see that from being, you know, going through that telemarketing stuff, which by the way, wasn't always, if I look back, probably wasn't always ethical, but we were selling, I think I was selling credit card insurance.
That's what mine was too. Exactly. Yep. And then it moved on to the Nextel cell phones, you know, the ones with the like walkie talkie. I felt a lot better about those. That was cool. But in credit card insurance, I was also 16, so I was a little bit none the wiser at that point.
But. Yeah, I was young, but so what do you think some of the biggest mistakes are that people, you know, that we make going into as entrepreneurs going into sales? Like, what are some of the roadblocks or some of the things that the mistakes that we make when we start to try to do that until we get to that point where we can actually hire a sales team out? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've got a lot of experience on that, on getting a true sales team in mm-hmm. to come in and do that work.
One of the most common you see in particular in the beginning is that most professionals, because it is the artist, because it is the skilled producer, you know, the visionary in the company that's creating the product or services, they are so immersed in their craft, in their trade. They have so much knowledge, so much information that we get excited to share it. But the problem is we haven't opened the door so that people are ready and willing to receive that information. It's like, I want to pour out all this knowledge because I do genuinely have the desire to help and serve, but people aren't ready to listen yet. They haven't tuned in the radio. So in order to effectively influence anyone, we've got to understand first what is influencing them. You know, what is it that they want? What is it they want to avoid? Like, what is the pain that they're in? You know, how are all those things making them feel? How are those things showing up in their lives? You know, what is the ripple effect? How is this problem now expanding and impacting their interpersonal relationships, their wealth, their health, their spirituality? And once we can help or really gain clarity and understanding of what that person is struggling with, then we can come in and help the individual to adopt a solution. But really, it's leading with empathy. I've walked in your shoes. I've been where you've been. And I know what it's like to make it to the other side. So when you can get past the facts and the figures and really focusing on getting to know the other person and what makes them tick, what drives them, what keeps them awake at night, what their greatest aspirations and visions for the future are, and then you can figure out how and show them that your product or service is the thing that will help them bridge that gap. That's one thing that will help people be significantly more successful. And that's the biggest thing they got to be cautious of, is people don't care about what your product does. They care about what your product will do for them. And that's the most important thing. Remember, it's not about you. It's about them. And when you can make that paradigm shift, that's critically important. And that's one thing. Now, I can keep rolling if you want.
Sure. Oh, yeah. That's great.
You know, another one for me, and this is it's a little one, but it also can be very insidious, is your energy, your emotion, or the state that you are in and how you show up to any given conversation. It's like if you're having a bad day and you don't take that opportunity to reset and put yourself in a higher energy state, and you carry that low energy state into that conversation, you know, we're spiritual beings. We're all connected at the atomic level. You feel that energy. You know, we've all walked into a room where you can cut the tension with a knife and you're like, whoa, I don't really want to be here. Well, that same energy can carry over into a one-to-one conversation and dynamic. So one of the most important things I do and did every time before I get on stage, every time before I get on the phone, is I take myself through a series of, you know, what Tony would call incantations to prime my state. An active use of my physiology. I'm shifting my focus. I'm shifting my language and really focusing on service. And when I can shift that and bring that energy into the conversation, that shifts the dynamics, because now I'm happier, they're happier, we're engaged, we're communicating. So the energy that you bring into a call is really, really important, whether you're on the sales floor, on the phone, on Zoom, or on the stage. Any place that you have the intention to influence, bring the best version of yourself. Because there's no way that you can call upon that from somebody else if you're not bringing the best version of you. So bring that energy and find ways to prime yourself and put yourself in the best state before you go into any conversation. That's one.
And that is, yeah, that is such a big point and such a good lesson, is we are energy people. We can feel when someone walks in the room and we don't even see them. We know mm-hmm. we feel that energy. And like you said, it's like we need to put ourselves, and it doesn't even matter if you're on a phone. If I can't see you, I can still feel your energy through the phone. Mm-hmm. And if we don't put ourselves in these higher levels of vibration, these states, then yeah, it absolutely comes across. And I can see that really helping in sales, because you're obviously trying to, you know, influence people. And by the way, so my method of just giving you all of the things that that my product will do is not the thing. I've actually got to show what problems it solves for you. Oh, wow. Yes, exactly. See, that's genius. I would, mm-hmm. yeah. But yeah, your state is absolutely, is critical. And it's like, mm-hmm. I never really realized that until, you know, later on, that most of what we say, most of our communication is really, even though it's subconscious, but it's through the energy, it's through the vibration and not the words that we say. Yeah. And it's so big. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely critical. You know, I got one more for you if you want me to throw it out right now too.
Absolutely.
Probably multiple, but you know, another one that pops into my mind is, it's like, and again, a lot of this comes back to resistance. What you resist persists. And what I've become really good at is paying attention to the things that I don't want to do, because they become a guiding light for more often than the thing that I need to do next. And in sales, and really in any aspect of business development, one of the things that most sales professionals and business owners, particularly when they're solopreneurs, tend to avoid is prospecting, is picking up the phones and making calls and learning how to effectively navigate gatekeepers and open the door and create conversations and get to the decision makers. And because what we are battling is human nature. It's like, what we fear is that fear of rejection, consciously or unconsciously. And what we end up doing, you know, unbeknownst to most people, is we end up activating that fight or flight response in the brain, because nobody likes to experience rejection. Nobody likes to hear the no's. But the brain can't differentiate between you being chased by a pack of dogs down the street or you being afraid to pick up the phone because you don't want to experience that rejection. But the more that we can condition ourselves to stop negotiating with ourselves, the more effective you will be in any aspect of your life. It's like, let me give you this example. Have you ever been in a cold plunge, done the ice bath thing yet?
Yep. Don't like doing it.
Did any part of your brain want to get into that cold plunge?
Hell no.
Does it now?
Nope.
But did you feel fantastic afterwards?
Yeah.
Was it invigorating, as in power? Like, I love ice baths for two different reasons. There's the physiological benefits. Like, I'm legally disabled. I've herniated disc in my back. I had back surgery. Like, the list goes on. I battle a lot of different physiological stuff, but I put myself in peak and keep myself in peak physical condition through all the things that I do. And one of those therapeutic modalities is the cold plunge. And I like it because it helps mitigate systemic inflammation and all these other good things. But the thing that I really love and value is that it has trained me to, I don't sit there and look at the edge of the pool and go, do I want to get in? My brain's already saying, no, you don't want to do this. There's no part of you that wants to do it. But I walk out, I set my timer, drop my robe, and I pop in, and I train myself not to negotiate with myself. When I say I'm going to do it, I go freaking do it. And it's the same thing when it comes to prospecting. There's this huge resistance. If I walk into most sales teams, I can tell you the number one thing that most of them aren't doing, and the number one thing that's going to drive more success, is going to be picking up the phone and making those calls and conversations. It's dedicating a power hour to where you sit down and for 60 minutes, all you're doing is going through your CRM. You're creating outreach. You're making calls. And when you start to do that and you make that commitment, you will consistently have a pipeline as full, and you will not have these dramatic fluctuations in your sales cycles. So prospecting is another one of those things that most sales professionals avoid, professionals in general. It's like, we think like we're networking, and yes, those aspects are good, but what are you doing to build that relationship, to actually invite or open the door for a conversation to see if you can actually serve them, that your product or service will help? So prospecting is another one of the things that people avoid that is going to have the biggest impact on creating a consistent flow within their pipeline, which will create more consistent cash flow and allow you to grow and scale, and ultimately warrant the need to bring on a sales team. So fill your leads, fill your pipeline, so you can get some team in there.
That's probably one of the things that I really need to focus on is doing that prospecting, because it's not something I like to do. It's not something that I do. But your method of like cold plunges and stuff like that is important on many different reasons. Obviously, it's the medical reasons and your health reasons for doing that. But you, when you're doing that, you're actually training your nervous system that when you're in an area where you don't want to do something, your nervous system kicks in and you do it. And by doing those things, like you said, it's important from a neuroscience standpoint as much as a health standpoint on getting us to that next level, getting us to move forward by doing those things all the time that we don't want to do.
There's one more piece to it too. And this is actually one of the coolest things, or for me, what's had the biggest impact, is I'm a very passionate individual. So, I mean, my emotions, because of that, I've got a very, what's the best frame? Like my, like, you know, if people live their average emotional states between here and here, I can live mine out here and here. And there's benefits and drawbacks to that. I can be very loving, passionate, and enthusiastic, but then some of those negative emotions can be equally as powerful. And one of the benefits with the cold plunge is it's also taught me to self-regulate. So where before I would have had like a trigger event or something that might inspire that nervousness or anxiety or anger or frustration or whatever that thing is, and I might go up to a level 9, now because I'm training my nervous system to stay calm in a place where the body is literally saying, get the hell out of the water right now, you're going to freeze to death. Now my body stays a lot calmer in all those environments where I would historically feel nervous or feel anxious or feel more angry. So I'm able to better regulate my emotions and choose what emotion is going to be the most important or necessary for the environment that I'm walking into.
Yeah, I watched for a while, I was watching this guy on YouTube that did a cold plunge every day for a year. It was like, I don't know, he was in Canada or something, but it was like 20 below, walks out there in his bathing suit, snow, breaks the ice to get in and gets in. I'm like, okay, I'm done. I tap out. That's cool. that's too much. I can't do that. That makes me, I can feel the pain to do that.
It is cold.
But when you, so if you're going to come in, so you know you have a big background of coming in with a sales kind of a sales team, developing a sales model. I don't know how you describe it, but come in and actually do a professional, like, here's how the sales are going to run. How important is it to you, or how much benefit do you see if you come into a company that says, okay, we're ready for a sales team to come in, we want someone to come in and do this for us, we've got kind of our, you know, SOPs in place, we need someone to come in and really take hold of this. How important is it for those companies to have what you refer to and what most people refer to as like a value ladder of having multiple things for a sales, or is just having one thing, like another, come in, we've got a $5,000 thing, that's all you sell? Or do you find it more beneficial from a sales standpoint when you have a $5,000, a $10,000, and maybe a $200 or $300 or $1,000 product, and you actually have a ladder to either move people up or down on?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I actually have, it sparks more questions and more answers to the questions. So let me try my best to eloquently navigate this conversation, because there are a multitude of directions. I think first and foremost, there's no perfect recipe or formula in any business. You know, some companies have really expansive value ladders with a free offer to an ultra low ticket, to a mid low ticket, to mid ticket, to mid high ticket, to high ticket, to ultra high ticket, like, and the list goes on and on and on. A lot of it depends on the sales and the marketing vehicles, the ultimate intentions, like, where is your audience at? So I'm gonna take a step back. In the beginning, less is more. So the earlier you are on in business, the fewer products you wanna have in that product suite, because it's more things to manage, it's more things to market. And the critical thing when you're building those tools is each product should build upon the next, because people are always looking for what's next. And the biggest differentiators between those products is the amount of access they get to you. In the beginning, it's like, I like to look at it this way. If you are making a lower investment, there's higher automation and lower first person personal experience. When they're making a larger investment, there's lower automation and significantly more first person one-to-one time and experience. So right. That's one aspect of it, is how we're looking at the pricing and the structure, but everything needs to build upon what's next. It's like, if I'm leveraging this product or service, I take this course, it gives me all the knowledge, insights, and information I need, and I'm able to apply it and win, fantastic. But that's not most people. But it does introduce them to the concept and now create the awareness that they need more help. So that next product should be greater access to you, whether that's a group facilitated environment, whether that's one-on-one, masterminds, what have you. And now they get greater access where you're able to hold them accountable, help them solve specific problems and challenges that are relative to their business. But it's always building upon the previous product, whether that's expanding and offering more knowledge, more strategies, more tools, more tactics. But there needs to be that continuity and congruency in each product. They need to be symbiotic and synergistic in those ways, not like I'm throwing this product out and this product out. It's like they need to really be working together synergistically. So that's one piece of it, or I guess multiple pieces of it. I had an idea of where I wanted to take that. Now it's escaping me.
Now, one of the things that you said on there is that, and it's kind of what I've done is kind of that one, the more I charge for a particular product, the more me that they have, you know, whether it's a recorded course that I've done, whether it's a live workshop that I've done, whether it's a, you know, a much smaller cohort, which is, you know, less people and more interaction to my, you know, mastermind groups that I run. And I think that's critical. And I don't think I thought about that for a long time. And what you said was so true. You have to be two steps ahead of what you're doing, because you have to think that the person that is now in your family, that is now, you know, part of your community, is going to need more than what you're doing now in that next offer. And that is such a huge, huge thing, a huge concept to look at and to actually work.
Yep, exactly. You know, it's always focusing on what's next. What are they going to need next to continue to reach their next level, to continue to succeed, and how can you best facilitate that? So that product or value ladder is incredibly important. Simplicity in the beginning is really important. You know, lower ticket is going to be higher automation, greater use of funnels. They're not going to, you know, as often be utilizing a sales team. Another thing that I really wanted to address is, and now, and this is my professional opinion, there may be people that disagree, and I'm okay with that, is I believe that every sales professional, if you have a team, there should be a team dedicated to a product. Because what ends up happening is you convolute those conversations. It's a lot harder to get in flow if you're trying to represent multiple products and bouncing back and forth between calls where people are signing up for one thing or another. That's one challenge. You can't really become fully invested and serve the client at the highest level if your mind is going multiple places. And it's the same thing if you're trying to sell multiple things on a call. It's like, well, I've got this product, but I can downsell you to this. A lot of salespeople will default to what's easiest. So instead of selling and really focusing on the product that the client needs, that the prospect needs, it's going to serve them at the highest level, they get a little bit of resistance and they just take a step back to, oh, well, you know, we've got this lower ticket product. It'll still serve you well. It's okay. But no, you got to be willing to fight for these people, fight for their dreams, because oftentimes you're fighting harder than they are capable of fighting for themselves in the moment. And that's really important to remember in these sales conversations, is in many cases, it depends on the nature, but in many cases, people are coming, they're signing up for a webinar, they're signing up for a free ebook because they're in pain. They have a problem that they need solved, and they're not sure if they're capable of handling that thing on their own. And then they're defaulting to all of the things that would prevent them from being able to succeed. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. My spouse isn't going to support it. My friends are going to think I'm crazy, whatever it is. But if you're there to serve them at the highest level, then you got to have conviction. You have to have wherewithal. You got to be saying, this is the thing that you need based on everything that you've told me, the conversations we've had. This is what will help you succeed. So it also allows you to stay focused in that regard. So there's focus, but in two different parallels. And both end up to, in my opinion, a higher level of service when it comes to the client experience.
So one of the other things that I've learned over the past 5 years, one of the biggest things is we have to actually ask for the sales. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, I remember when I used to do like webinars like 4 or 5 years ago, I'd do this 30-minute webinar, great, people loved it. And at the end, I was like, okay, thank you. Like, oh, and by the way, you can buy, you know, I've got this workshop, whatever. I didn't actually focus on asking and really offering that. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I've learned is they're not going to buy unless you ask, unless you engage in that conversation with them. And for me, that was a very uncomfortable thing to do, even though I knew it was what they needed. I knew this would help them. It was still somewhat uncomfortable for me to make that ask and say, this is what I have. This is what, and that was such a big thing. Once I started actually asking on the webinars and that type of stuff, people started buying. But yeah, for the longest time, I'd have one slide at the end. Hey, yeah, thanks a lot. 2 seconds on it. And you know,
yeah.
Done.
And you know, and again, that actually comes back to that fight or flight response, that fear, because we know that as soon as we ask, one of two things is going to happen. People are going to say yes, or they're going to say no. And statistically, more people are going to say no. You know, it's like, this is one of the things I really love. Like, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I have the utmost respect for baseball players, because you know, one, the dynamic of a ball moving 100 miles an hour coming straight at you and trying to hit that thing from a fixed position is remarkably difficult. But two, the other side of it is those baseball players statistically lose significantly more often than they win at bat. So the amount of mental strength that it takes to show up and step up to the plate every single time and prepare for that swing, knowing that 7 out of 10 times, 8 out of 10 times, you're going to strike out, takes a lot of courage. And sales, entrepreneurship, business takes courage. And it's that willingness to have the conversations, the hard conversations, and then to your point, ask for the sale, that is so critically important. But the other part of it is people need to be told to do what to do next. You know, it's the same in marketing. If you're not calling them to action, if you're not compelling them to engage with your social posts or asking them questions or saying, go check out this link, they're not going to do that thing because our mind is going to be immediately distracted by something else in the environment, the next post in the feed. So always tell your clients what to do next, both in your marketing and in your sales, and be willing to ask for that sale, because that ask is the only thing, is a belief I carry in every one of those conversations, is the only thing that's going to transform their life. If I don't ask, they can't succeed.
Fantastic. Well, Zach, thank you so much for spending the time today to come on the show and to be with us and to give us your knowledge in sales. I mean, it's such a, again, for entrepreneurs, it's such a big thing. And it's one of those things, it's like public speaking. We normally, it's something we normally don't like to do, but we need to do it. And at a minimum, we need to understand it so we can, you know, make sure that it gets done within our companies. And everybody listening today, everybody, you know, the Thinking Big Nation, go out and let's, you know, support Zach and follow him. You're basically, it's these, I feel like you're a football player, like a famous football player, the Zach Palmer on virtually every platform, whether it's Instagram or Facebook, but the Zach Palmer. But again, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. Yeah. I mean, I would love and appreciate that. I love the opportunity to connect with your audience. It's the Zach Palmer, ZACPALMER. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. Don't hesitate to reach out. I'd love to offer a free breakthrough session to any one of your listeners that's at a stage or a current place in time where they're like, you know, I'm at that pivotal point. I've built up my sales. I've got a consistent flow of leads, and I don't know what to do next. I don't know what systems, what processes, what procedures. I'm not sure how to go about the hiring process, what, you know, proper onboarding and training and all those things look like. So if you're currently at that point where your business is succeeding, you're crushing it, and you're ready to start growing and evolving and scaling it and taking it to another level, please do reach out. I would love and look forward to the opportunity to have a conversation with your listeners.
Fantastic. And everyone listening, obviously all the stuff is going to be in all your handles and stuff for your social media are going to be in the show notes as well. So if you didn't catch that, you know, make sure you go to the show notes. They'll all be in there. And I have witnessed firsthand what Zach does. So again, I get probably 30 or 40 requests a week from these, you know, these agencies to have people on the podcast. The only people that I have on my podcast are people that I know, like, and trust. And I've seen Zach at work. I've seen him do what he does. And you've made from a sales standpoint, you've made a lot of money for a lot of people. So, you know, you've been there. You've done that. So, again, thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. It was my pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to join you on the call. It was great.